This is White Sox Weekly, your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago. Now here's your host, Connor McKnight.
Welcome in to White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000, the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. I am Connor McKnight, big guy, big voice guy said so, so must be true. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number here on White Sox Weekly. Lots to talk about. September call-ups are tomorrow, and there are reports out already that the White Sox are considering one of their top prospects to bump up to the bigs. We'll tell you about that in just a little bit. White Sox fans, there's still time to win one-of-a-kind experiences this season. Enter the Ultimate Fan Sweepstakes for your chance to create your own bobblehead. August's winner will get to create their own custom bobblehead and get 20 bobbleheads to keep for themselves or to give out to friends and family. To enter, visit whitesox.com/sweepstakes. Ball game coming up at 6:10 tonight. White Sox trying to shake an 8-game losing streak. They are winless on the homestand, having lost 4 in a row to the Tigers, 3 in a row to the Rangers, and game 1 of this 3-game series to the New York Mets, 5-1 last night. We'll talk a little bit about last night's ball game, about the starter, Jonathan Cannon, about the state of the pitching in the White Sox system, the state of the offense as well. It's two very different conversations in terms of tenor and expectation, I think, too. But we will also get into some of the September call-ups that are reportedly out there already. Oh, plus, White Sox pitching coach Ethan Katz is our guest at 4 o'clock this afternoon. So you want to make sure to stick around for that. Ethan, nice enough to give us a little bit of time earlier this afternoon. We talked a lot about the state of the White Sox pitching organization here at the big league level with all the youngsters and Garrett Crochet. Long conversation, a lot part of the conversation about Garrett Crochet and his evolution and the future for the player as well. That's coming up at 4 with White Sox pitching coach Ethan Katz. So rosters go from 26 to 28 tomorrow. And while we'll obviously dive into the game today with old friend Jose Quintana set to start for the Mets and Davis Martin working for the White Sox, got a lineup for you here as well. It is news and reported out there that the White Sox will reportedly call up Jairo Iriarte on Sunday when the rosters go from 26 to 28. I've not seen any reports about the position player that's going to be called up. Remember, when you go to 28, you've still got to be 14 and 14. There's a pitcher limit on those rosters right now. Tiburones report and Daniel Alvarez Montes of L Extra Base and a couple others with the report out there. This is not confirmed by the team yet, but we have been poking around to try and find out exactly who these players are going to be. And if indeed it is Iriarte, that's the one reported right now, it's an interesting move by the White Sox and one that is also kind of in step with the philosophy and actions of the organization here over the last year. Chris Getz and his front office, Brian Bannister on the pitching side of things, along with Ethan Katz, have been, you know, pretty open, if not fearless, about bringing up players, pitchers specifically, from the AA level and into the major leagues. And that's where Iriarte would come up from. He's been working at Birmingham pretty much all season long. He has been really good to start the season, got off to a fantastic start with an ERA under 3 through all of May. Some trouble in June and July for Iriarte, some starts where blow-ups occurred. But here in the month of August, there are 35 innings of work on Iriarte's resume. He's got a 257 earned run average in 6 starts with, let's see, the strikeouts at 27. The walks are up there with 16. But if you look through the walk totals, the individual game results for Iriarte, it is quite often a start with a big walk number, 4, and then a start with a very tiny walk number, 0. He goes 4-0, 4-1, 6-1 in his six August starts. It is a player with some pretty high upside in terms of the upper tier fastball velocity and the slider, a little bit different than the guys the White Sox have made the call to already this season with Kai Bush and Jonathan Cannon and Nick Nastrini even a little bit. There's a bit of a different feel, I think, for Iriarte, and if and when he gets here, I believe we'll see it, and that's because of the high-velocity operation. A little bit like, well, comping him to Garrett Crochet is kind of a fool's errand. We're going to talk a lot about Garrett Crochet here as the show goes on, but when you think about pitchers that have kind of that high-velo stuff, you get to think about them differently than some of the others that have to be, if not more crafty, then certainly more cerebral about how they go about getting hitters out. And oftentimes, when we get to the scouting of those players, the guys with that high-end velo get scouted as having a higher ceiling than some of the other guys who throw a little bit slower and need to work around batters just a little bit differently. So that's a fairly exciting thing for the White Sox, if indeed these reports are true. And it, again, just reports right now, nothing official from the team. And I would imagine that even if the decision's been made to call up this player or that player, there's still 9 innings of baseball to get played here this afternoon. And whatever happens, this evening, and whatever happens in that ballgame is going to have something to say about what the major league roster needs. Now, it's a little bit different given the White Sox are 31-105 on the season, and it's just as much, if not maybe mostly, about development from here on out as it is anything else. And development is going to lean towards Iriarte being the guy to get called up if these reports are correct, regardless of circumstances on the big league roster. What we've also seen here over the last 8 games since the off day after the White Sox took 1 of 3 against the Giants in San Francisco this past week is that while there have been some decent starts and good outings from the bullpen, Touki Toussaint able to work 4 innings and give up just 1 run, that saved a lot of penmanship. The White Sox had to throw a bullpen game in that second game of 2 against the Rangers with Matt Foster and Sammy Peralta and Gus Varland and Jared Schuster and Justin Anderson all working. Chris Flexen came out there and saved some bacon for the White Sox after Garrett Crochet threw 4 pitches. Yeah, 4 pitches before the rains just absolutely wiped us out on Tuesday night. So Flexen, though he is a starter and is in this rotation, was a bullpen arm in that particular night, technically speaking. And his 6 1/3 went a long way to saving more arms. Still, this bullpen has been worked a little bit. Iriarte has been built up as a starter all year long. All told this year, he's thrown, it's 35 innings work in the month of August for Iriarte. And I guess I can give you the whole 2024 minor league stats for him as well. 126 innings for Iriarte. He is 5-7 if you're into the whole pitcher win-loss thing. And certainly in the minor leagues, you shouldn't be, but that is his record. 371 earned run average, 22 starts, 23 total games. I believe one of those games he did not start was an outing where he was piggybacking Noah Schultz, the top pitcher in the White Sox organization. Schultz, when he first got up to Double-A, was getting 4 innings of work and then getting piggybacked by the rest of the rotation. Whomever it was, Kai Bush, Iriarte, Thorpe, Mason Adams, whoever else of the starting 5 that was in there on that day for Schultz, I believe he was pitching Saturdays, if memory serves, was that guy to come out there and piggyback. I want to read just a little bit from the MLB.com, the MLB Pipeline Scouting Report for Jairo Iriarte. And, we can kind of look at this from a couple of different perspectives, because even if the White Sox are looking at somebody else to call up, I think given the way September may go for the White Sox and what White Sox general manager Chris Getz has said already this season about the player himself, it's entirely possible that even if Iriarte isn't the 14th guy added to the White Sox pitching staff, that we may still see him before the season is over. I'll read you just a little bit here from MLB Pipeline. It reads, Iriarte's fastball sat in the mid-90s and touched 100 in 2023, showing good ride and run allowing him to effortlessly hit the high arm side corner consistently. But he's operated more at 92-95 this year, 2024. He's got a sharp low 80s slider that can dive to the opposite end of the zone, moving away from right-handers and back-footing lefties. His low 90s changeup doesn't have great velocity separation, but does have the fade needed to run away from opposite side bats. Iriarte doesn't necessarily control those darting pitches well. We talked about that in his walk totals so far this season already. The scouting report continues. The breaking stuff and change combination especially gets a little wild. And double-A hitters have laid off some of that stuff outside the strike zone, leading to a career-high 14% walk rate at double-A this year. Iriarte did whiff a career-best 41% of the batters he faced in double-A. They're talking about this season. And the quality extension he creates in his delivery makes his pitches even more difficult to barrel. He has the ceiling of a number three starter. And while he comes with reliever risk, that's due to the walk rate, I would imagine, he has closer upside if he does change roles. That's the MLB Pipeline Scouting Report, updated at the middle of this season on Jairo Iriarte on MLB Pipeline. He is 22 years old, turns 23 on the 15th of December, 6'2", 160 pounds is the bio listing on Jairo Iriarte. He is the fifth-ranked prospect in the White Sox system. I don't know who the hitting side equivalent is going to be for the White Sox. And there's been a lot of conversation about whether or not Colson Montgomery is going to be the player called up to add to the White Sox roster right now. Certainly, there have been a couple of things going on up the middle infield that might allow for the White Sox to open a spot for their top position player prospect, Colson Montgomery, a first-round draft pick just a couple of years ago. One of them being Brooks Baldwin has not played in a couple of days. He's got a wrist issue that he's working through, and the Sox are hopeful that it is not going to be an issue that puts him on the injured list. We've not seen him start since that first game against the Rangers. Technically not a doubleheader, but I'm going to refer to it that way because it's just easier. But we've seen Nicky Lopez and Lenine Sosa and Jake Amaya split some of the middle infield responsibilities over the last few games with Brooks Baldwin out with that wrist issue. That would mean, well, let me finish out the rest of the situations here for the White Sox middle infield. We have also seen Lenine Sosa have a tough time defensively here over the last four or five games. There have been some miscommunication issues with Sosa and Lopez and Baldwin, whomever has been at short. There's the play the other night where Sosa is cutting off a ball that Lopez could have easily handled and thrown over to first because his momentum's taking it that way from shortstop. We've seen Sosa kind of deal with communication issues while playing second base. Third base seems to be a much more comfortable and confident position for Lenine Sosa, but the White Sox seemingly want to give as much of that playing time to Miguel Vargas as they can. Obviously, his being the headliner in the trade, the three-way trade that sent Eric Fetty and Tommy Pham and Michael Kopech to other places, you want to see Miguel Vargas play in third base. Actually, Vargas is looking much more comfortable here over the last four or five games at third base, even still. Maybe a step being taken by Miguel Vargas defensively. Offensively, another conversation to be had. And then the third issue that might allow for the White Sox to call up Colson Montgomery, or not allow for, perhaps that's not the right way to put it, but another outside circumstance or extra circumstance that might push for a middle infielder elevated from AAA Charlotte might be the fact that Nicky Lopez was placed on waivers. Reports said that Lopez was placed on waivers 2 days ago or closing in on the 48-hour window. When players are put on these waivers at this point of the year, as Tommy Pham was by the Cardinals, he was actually just picked up by the Royals. In fact, two former White Sox were picked up by the Royals as they pushed to try and win the NL Central this year. Just this afternoon, Robbie Grossman was placed on the on waivers by the Rangers and claimed by the Royals. Tommy Pham was placed on waivers and claimed by the Royals as well. So both of those players will head to the Kansas City Royals. Doesn't look like they'll be there today, but probably tomorrow for KC. It's kind of an interesting set of circumstances as the Kansas City Royals are dealing with an injury to Vinny Pasquantino, their first baseman, and looking for help from as many different positions as they can get. Not that Grossman or Pham would go to play first base, I don't imagine, but they probably have a couple of players, maybe a guy like MJ Melendez, that needs to move into a different spot in order to accommodate that injury to Pasquantino that is likely going to keep him out, definitely going to keep him out until the start of the playoffs and may keep him out the entire length of the playoffs with the broken thumb. Len and DJ were talking about that injury and how it affects the Royals during the broadcast last night, and DJ pointed out, as a guy who understands it and knows it and has been there, that you break a thumb as a hitter, sure, it might say 6 to 8 weeks until you can get back to playing, but how long is it going to be until that, you know, that feel and that timing and rhythm and any kind of danger comes with that swing, given the fact that you're dealing with a broken thumb and the healing of that process, all that kind of stuff. So I think the Royals kind of have to consider themselves without Vinny Pasquantino for the duration of the playoffs unless he can prove otherwise. We've got to consider that something that the Royals are just going to have to deal with. They made claims and have picked up two former White Sox, Robbie Grossman from the Rangers and Tommy Pham from the Kansas City Royals. We're going to take a break here on White Sox Weekly. When we come back, we'll talk about what that other player called up by the White Sox, that position player guy, could be, could look like, and might be able to provide for the Sox. Should it be Colson Montgomery? Want your thoughts on that, too. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number. Oh, and don't forget, White Sox pitching coach Ethan Katz will be our guest here coming up at 4 o'clock on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Recap the game, Cap and J-Hood, weekday mornings at 7.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. I'm Connor McKnight. Head to the ballpark on Monday, September 9th, for Nurses Night, presented by St. Xavier University. Receive a White Sox scrub top when you purchase a specially priced ticket. Limited availability. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. White Sox and Mets coming up at 6:10 this evening. Pregame show starts at 5:30. We got you here on White Sox Weekly until then. Davis Martin and former White Sox Jose Quintana, the pitching matchup tonight. But right now, our guest on the show is White Sox pitching coach Ethan Katz. Ethan, appreciate you doing this, especially on a game day and with a whole lot of work on the board here, right? I mean, September 1st, we've got call-ups. You'll get a new pitcher. The bullpen has been used a little bit lately, and you've got a whole bunch of young arms that you've been shepherding here the last couple of months. Thanks again.
Yeah, no problem.
How full is the player development bingo card right now? Like, if you had all the list of things that you wanted to see some of these young arms go through, experience, and kind of check off the list, and it was all on a bingo card, how many would be punched out right now, and what would some of those things be?
I mean, there's a lot of them. Every single guy has certain things that they're kind of working on right now, whether we're trying to recapture some stuff or trying to add some stuff. There's a lot going on each day with every single guy that's here right now.
Do you feel like there's a lot of mission accomplished for guys already? I know there's a month to play and like a game today and all that kind of stuff, but whether it's Cannon or Nastrini or Crochet, it really kind of feels like there's a lot that's been learned and can already be kind of thought of as good work so far.
Yeah, I mean, it's good. I mean, the experiences that these guys are getting are great. They're growing. They're all young. We're asking a lot out of them right now. But this experience that they're going through are fantastic. And every single game, there's great learning experiences to kind of rehash with them after the game and talk about and kind of certain moments in the game that's going to really help their development. So it's really good that they're getting this experience. They all have a lot of things that they're working on and trying to, you know, build a lot of momentum moving forward in their big league careers.
What was some of that conversation like with Nick Nastrini after his start last night, perhaps? We saw some really good stuff from him, a good command and break on the slider. Can you give us an example of what that conversation might have been like with Nick, or what it will be like maybe a little bit later this afternoon if you haven't had it yet?
Yeah, I mean, we just talked about really like the biggest thing early on when his first couple outings here, it became very slider dependent. So he would get in trouble, which is fine. You know, guys will turn to one certain pitch to get back in the counts when they get into tough situations. But, you know, he was able to use all of his pitches, and when he needed to keep the fastball in order, when guys were possibly hunting that pitch, which we kind of felt like we saw from Seager hitting the 2-0 slider out, he was able to pivot and be able to use his fastball a little bit more. and still keeping the slider intact for certain guys. So him being able to have four pitches that hitters had to think about was a very nice adjustment from him. He went, you know, all the information we gave him, that the stuff that he needed to work on, you really showed up the other day.
He talked a little bit in his own post-game session after that really good start, that quality start against the Rangers, about building on what he did. In what way does a guy build on that start? You mentioned kind of that slider usage. Is that where you begin to kind of take the next step?
I think more of just the execution of the fastball. That was the one thing that was a little bit lacking early in his first couple outings up here. And being able to have that, make a big pitch with the fastball, really kept his, you know, the secondary stuff going for him. And that's something that he's going to have to continue to do. You know, the next step for him is, like, you know, we want to try to get his fastball a little bit more up in the zone and be a little bit more particular in certain things. But, you know, for the first time back, that was huge steps that we, you know, stuff that we asked him to work on, he did, and being able to carry that. And then, you know, the momentum that guys get is just the confidence. That was a great lineup that he had to navigate through, and, you know, that kind of stuff just kind of, it really helps these young guys keep building momentum, and it makes them understand that they can do this at this level.
Talking with White Sox pitching coach Ethan Katz here on White Sox Weekly. Ethan, how are you and Brian Bannister and everybody else on the pitching side of things dealing with a lot of the young pitchers, in that you want them to learn lessons, you want them to take the ball and face tough hitters like you're talking about, but also that we're nearing the end of a very long season for some of these young arms who haven't seen this kind of workload before?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely in the back of our mind. You know, for instance, last night, Cannon could have probably gone back out and, you know, kind of see what happens, gone hitter by hitter. But, you know, is that what's best for him at this point when he's at 92 pitches? You know, it's things like that we have to make sure we're smart with. You know, Davis Martin's, as much as he's going out there, he's performing exceptionally well, his pitch count's low, he's coming out of the game, you know, would we like for him to keep going? Sure, but he's also coming back from Tommy John. And we have to really be mindful about keeping these guys healthy, not trying to do too much, while also making sure that they're getting enough work to prepare them for next year, but not overwork them at the same time.
What's the biggest thing on the list for Jonathan Cannon the rest of the way? I thought the changeup he threw to Lindor for the strikeout to start his night was absolutely filthy. At times, Cannon can find a little bit too much strike zone with some of his stuff. A lot of young pitchers can. Where would you like to see him grow most specifically here over the next couple starts?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, the conversation me and him are going to have here in the next couple minutes are going to be talking about some of the stuff that he did, you know, really well. You know, last night he got himself into a really, you know, a tough spot with bases loaded, and he did a great job minimizing, almost got out of it. And, you know, then, you know, the following couple innings, he got into a spot where he got two quick outs. You know, he had a bigger name up there at the plate and got a little bit, for me, a little bit too fine with his stuff instead of just, like, kind of trusting it, kind of going. So that's very common. You know, that's very common at this level. But he's got elite weapons, and we just got to keep, you know, we got to keep our foot on the gas. We can't give these hitters too much credit. Forget about the name on the back. Like, go after these guys the same way he went after Lindor all night. That's what we want. And sometimes that can speed up on guys. And next, you know, they're getting into tougher counts, and then they realize, oh, I got to be really perfect with this pitch. Where when you have these great weapons, we don't need to do that. We just need to control counts. Put the pressure on them, and then kind of go from there. So that's, like, the biggest thing for him, is that he's showing elite weapons up here. He's got the stuff. It's just now being able to continually stay on the attack. Stay on the attack with the great weapons you have and trust it that they'll miss it with the ball or swing and miss more often than not.
I'm looking back through my book, Ethan, and if you can, is that the J.D. Martinez at-bat you're thinking about, or is it the Pete Alonso at-bat? Because I thought both kind of the same sort of idea, but they're very different circumstances, too.
Yeah, I believe it was Alonso at-bat. It was he just got into a 3-0 count, and I think he came back with a strike, and they ended up walking him. But he was just trying to be so particular with his sinker down in the zone, which we've really been trying to encourage him not to. It doesn't need to be on the corner. Sinker's down is great. But it was like he was trying to hit that down and away quadrant so perfectly, and there was no one on base. Like, trust your stuff. You got him out earlier. You know, he's a great hitter. I get that, but I like our stuff better than the guy at the plate.
Davis Martin's shown some really good stuff. He's got the ball for the White Sox tonight against the Mets. He's kind of described his evolution in terms of the arsenal since coming back from Tommy John. I'd love to know your perspective on when you guys as a pitching staff kind of understood that he was going to look different because his because of the physical changes after the surgery and, you know, kind of how it evolved to get him where he is, because he looks really good.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing, I've been a big Davis Martin fan ever since he showed up in Kansas City. We never met and took the ball in 22 and gave us a great start. So I've been looking forward for him to come back. It was a big loss for us last year, obviously from a depth standpoint, not having him. But, you know, the biggest thing with him is he's added the cutter. And then the day before his start in Oakland, we added a changeup and finally got a changeup that he felt comfortable with. He threw about four or five of them off the mound, and it was an elite changeup. It was never going to take it into action. So now his arsenal is kind of complete. He has one of the better changeups around, I would say. You can see teams trying to game plan it for that pitch now, and you know he's able to combat both handedness. So the evolution of him, and kind of he jokes about, you know, having Tommy John probably made me a better pitcher because I got a more complete arsenal now. He's probably not wrong, but you know, the way he goes about his business and how he conducts himself on the mound, it's special. It really is special. And he's got some weapons now that before Tommy John, he didn't really have.
Want to talk about Garrett Crochet. He'll get the ball on Sunday, Ethan. And, you know, for a little bit here, and maybe even now, he's one of the most talked about pitchers in baseball. You guys have used the phrase uncharted waters with him quite often because it's fair. It's absolutely where you guys have been with him in his development. Do you feel now a more comfort about where he needs to be on a given start in a week, you know, as this process goes, now that you've had some time to chart the waters prior to this?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's still every outing, every bullpen, we're really kind of, how are you feeling? Let's see, okay, we threw this many pitches this game, that there was this many ups. You know, being mindful of everything he's doing, not just the bullpens and all that, but when he's throwing, checking in with him, seeing how he's doing. But you know, to his credit, he takes great care of himself. He plans hard. He prepares hard for every single start that he has. And obviously, we've been tapering him down and not trying to let, you know, his innings get too far out of control, but also kind of protecting him at the same rate, but still getting him the experiences of still preparing every fifth day. So, you know, we're continued going through that. He's been recovering really well. There's been no dip in velo. His biomechanics reports are coming back the same. So there's no indication of him that any red flags right now. We just need to make sure we don't push him too hard.
He's been expanding the arsenal over the last couple of starts. Why now?
The conversation we had, teams are really, you know, we saw it with Cease. Teams were just stockpile lefties against Cease to try to take away the slider, and right now teams are stockpiling righties. So, you know, the way I, you know, I've talked to him about it, this is a great opportunity to continue the development of the changeup for next year. And you know, the one adjustment early on with him was he kept getting burned with his sweeper and down into righties, and they just kept hitting pop fly home runs to left field. So it was, you know, the transformation of, okay, let's flip this to the cutter, use the cutter up, use the cutter down. Let's limit our usage for the sweeper unless we get into a little bit of a punching match to make sure we're protecting that pitch as much as possible, because that is a pitch that can you know, cause a little bit of damage. And so by doing that, he's been able to do that, but now teams are starting to problem solve for his cutter. So we're trying to just combat that every way possible and just kind of open up that down and away quadrant, and also using the outer rail a little bit more.
There's no really way for me to ask this question without leading the witness, so I'm just going to not care about it and do it anyway. I don't think people give Garrett enough credit for being as smart as he is up on the mound. it's really easy to look at like 6'6 and shoulders that go from first base to third base and go, oh, he's a power pitcher. He's just getting by on velocity and stuff. He seems to me to think about this game in a really educated way. I wonder if you could share an anecdote about that as it concerns Crochet.
Yeah, I mean, he's very well prepared. You know, one thing I think the benefit of kind of seeing guys that have been here in the past and how they've, you know, having some veteran starters here and seeing how they prepared, the conversation meetings we've had, he'll go into our advanced meeting before we start. He's watched video. He's taken his notes. He knows where his stuff plays the best. So he's going about this, you know, very, very well. And it's changed a lot. The evolution of Garrett Crochet in my time here it's been a remarkable story. This was a guy that was, you know, giving guys too much credit as much as a year ago, throwing 2-0 changeups to the 9-hole hitter because he felt like they would be on his fastball. To now, he doesn't care who's in the box. He's going, you know, he's going at him. He knows where he wants to go and how he wants to attack him. And the confidence in his stuff at this level is grown immensely.
That's awesome. The 2-0 changeup it makes a lot of sense. I mean, we've really seen that evolve. Last one for you, and it's more of a, you know, 10,000 foot view question. We heard reports that Major League Baseball is considering, as the idea has been tossed around, 6 innings or 100 pitches for a starting pitcher before they can depart the ball game, trying to, you know, get more length back into the, and obviously there'll be a lot of caveats and what have yous around that idea. But generally speaking, thoughts on that one, the 6 innings or 100 pitches for a starter before he gets to leave a ball game?
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind it. I don't think it's a bad idea. I think it's good. I mean, I like, starters going deep. You know, everyone, you know, the perfect world is a starter doesn't face, you know, third time through the round the order. But, you know, there's a lot of hurdles with that in the sense of, you know, what does your bullpen look like that day? How much coverage do you have? Can you pull a guy out after the fourth inning and get through the game? And then tomorrow, feel comfortable with what you have, with what the usage you might have. I mean, there's just a lot of factors. But every time a starter does go 6 innings, the bullpen is probably in a pretty good shape that day and the following day. So I think there's a lot of value to that. I think there also has to be some mindfulness, too, because if a guy looks like he's fatiguing out and to just kind of force it, I don't know if that's what's best, but, you know, I can see the positives. I can see the negatives from it as well.
Ethan, really appreciate the time, man. Thanks so much, and best of luck today against the Mets.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Again, that's White Sox pitching coach Ethan Katz, and we thank him for his time here on White Sox Weekly this afternoon. If you tuned into the interview halfway through or just want to hear it again or play it for your friends, or if you're members of the Katz family and just want to hold on to it for years, you can download the ESPN Chicago app. Each and every White Sox Weekly episode is available for you on the ESPN Chicago app at your leisure and for your pleasure. White Sox and Mets coming up at 6:10 tonight. Pregame show at 5:30. I'm Connor McKnight. More White Sox Weekly on the other side here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
White Sox Weekly Saturdays on ESPN Chicago.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. I'm Connor McKnight. White Sox fans get access to the best seats at the best value and lock in a 2025 ticket plan today. Be here for the biggest matchups, exciting new promotions, and opening day on March 27th. It's a Thursday. Plus, enjoy flexible payment plans, savings on single games, and more. To secure your ticket plan, visit whitesox.com/2025. Got a ball game coming up tonight, 6:10. White Sox will take on the Mets. Our pregame show begins at 5:30. We got you here on White Sox Weekly up until then. And a big thank you to Ethan Katz, White Sox pitching coach, for joining us in the last segment, talking a lot about everybody in the White Sox pitching infrastructure, I guess. Or at least everybody we asked him about. We weren't sure when, I mean, full disclosure, we talked to Ethan about an hour and a half, maybe even 2 hours before the news broke, and then was confirmed by White Sox manager Grady Sizemore that Jairo Iriarte would be the 28th man added to the roster when they expand tomorrow. He'll be the extra arm. Sounds like it's going to be Zach DeLoach, who is here on the taxi squad right now and expected to be promoted to the big league roster tomorrow when rosters expand from 26 to 28. Talk about Deloach in just a little bit. But it sounds like it's going to be Jairo Iriarte. We talked a lot about Iriarte in the first part of the show, the first hour of the show here this afternoon. I think the other thing that was really interesting to me was all the stuff about Garrett Crochet when we talked with Ethan Katz. And, you know, I saw this interview happening in the White Sox clubhouse a few days ago, and it's now been posted on Fangraphs.com. David Larilla is a good writer for them, was talking with Crochet, getting the ins and outs of his season so far. And I thought this paired well with how Ethan was talking about Garrett's kind of evolution as a, you know, not just a power guy, but also kind of a cerebral pitcher, a guy who can think around batters a little bit and finesse things some. This is the interview on Fangraphs is set up just pretty simply as a Q&A. So I'll read from it here a little bit, and I'll let you know which is the question and what's the Crochet answer here and kind of how things went back and forth in the clubhouse a couple of days ago. So one of the questions, and I'm picking it up kind of right in the middle of the interview, and again, this is on Fangraphs.com. Question is your approach more or less to aim middle and let the movement and velocity play from there? And Crochet says, yes and no. With the cutter, it's primarily the focus, but with the heater, the four-seamer, I'm still trying to be relatively crafty. Like I'm trying to go down and away. I'm trying to go up and up and away, chasing above. I give myself wider room for margin with my velocity, sure, but it's still honing in on a spot and focusing on execution. The next question or kind of follow-up is being crafty with a power heater is interesting, if not a little counterintuitive. And Crochet says, yeah, definitely. And this is exactly what Ethan was talking about in the interview that we just finished up. Back to Crochet. I think that I said something along those lines in spring training to Ethan Katz. I was like, I get stuck because internally I feel like I have the ability to be crafty, but it's also my nature to just be a power pitcher. That's my competitor, my inner competitor. That's kind of what fuels my fire. And the questioner goes back to him and says, how do you define crafty? Now, this is where I think, I mean, this is it. Crochet says pitching backwards, backdoor cutters, backdoor sliders, things of that nature, kind of like how I'm saying fastballs down and away instead of how I throw four seams. So maybe I should live at the top of the zone, but I kind of want to utilize all four quadrants of the plate. There was a window in May and June, Crochet said, where I felt like I was really getting to the down and away quadrant. But lately, I haven't really been as much. In the game versus Houston a couple starts ago, my changeup was the one getting to that quadrant, that pitch getting to that quadrant. But I would like to increase chase, or at least keep guys honest when I throw the cutter down. That's just a little snippet of the interview. It's on Fangraphs.com about Garrett Crochet considering becoming a craftier power pitcher. That's the name of the article. It's a Q&A. It's really good. I highly recommend going to read it. I highly recommend using Fangraphs for all of your baseball needs. They are a fantastic publication. Really smart folk over there. And I think that kind of sums up the Crochet that we were talking about Ethan Katz with, talking about with Ethan Katz just a couple of minutes ago. I noticed, and I think a lot of people have, obviously, that Crochet over his last few starts has really trying to work in the rest of the arsenal as best as it's working in a given start. And as much as he can, knowing that the innings are going to be limited, the pitches themselves are going to be limited, probably something like four in his next outing against the Mets, and that's tomorrow afternoon. I like the idea of Crochet using whatever time is left here to work a little. And I get that there are some who have looked back at the last four or five starts from Crochet and thought, boy, is he the same guy? You know, I don't know. Innings have been limited. I don't know that he's got the same stuff. You decrease that competitive fire a little bit. I get that. That's all absolutely fair to point out and fair to wonder about. But I think given the state of the White Sox, where they're at 31-105, given the fact that this is about, and Grady Sizemore has essentially said both with his words and his actions that this is about development, the words kind of being, this is about development, and the actions being things like having Dominic Fletcher face as many lefties as possible, it seems here over the last couple of weeks, leaving guys in to face the other hand, or the having the platoon disadvantage, I suppose, in an effort to try and see them grow some in those challenge spots. That's clearly been the goal for the White Sox here over the last few weeks. It seems to going to be the goal going forward here over the last month of play. And if there's development left for Crochet, and obviously there is for every player, I guess, it's using the rest of the pitches to becoming more, if it's possible, complete pitcher. You know, we had Tarek Skubal come through here. He's probably going to win the American League Cy Young Award. And I was talking with somebody who had kind of posed the question to me, like, would you rather have Skubal going forward or Crochet? Now, obviously, they're different players. They're both lefties. They both very much come into their own this season. Skubal's got a much longer track record as a starter in the bigs than Crochet does. I mean, almost everyone has a longer body of work in the bigs as a starter than Garrett Crochet does. Leading up to this season, where Skubal is 15-4 with a .789 win percentage and a .258 earned run average, lower than everyone in baseball outside of Chris Sale. Leading up to this breakout year for Skubal, he'd thrown 380 innings, and the ERA plus was a 108. He was just slightly better than big league average. Now, 2023 was his big-time breakout season. While he was good in 22 with a 111 ERA plus, a 155 in 2023, especially in a second half where he was downright dominant, was big-time stuff. And I think everybody who watched him work those last, I don't know, eight or nine starts, five or six starts in 80 total innings, was putting Tarek Skubal as a dark horse candidate to win the American League Cy Young, and here he is looking like he's going to do it. I think what Skubal has been able to do is grow the arsenal to a point where he can get swings and misses, not just on one, but kind of on two or three pitches. And I don't just mean for strikeouts, though that's important. I think for Crochet, those next steps would be something similar to what Skubal has accomplished doing this year. Crochet being able to work that changeup in, not just as a show me, keep me off balance pitch, but as a pitch that can get some whiffs when need be. A sinker, if that's what he's working with here, to get some, maybe that's more of a ground ball pitch, considering that that fastball and cutter is such a huge swing and miss pitch for him. And I think maybe those are the next places that Crochet can grow. Now, all of that, all of those next steps help Crochet, whether or not he's with the White Sox in 2025 or not. And if he's able to grow in those places, if he's able to develop those pitches, those swings and misses, if he's able to just get more comfortable in throwing those pitches and throwing a wider arsenal here in the limited work he's got available to him in the last month of the season, then that helps the White Sox too, because if you can show other teams that he is a more complete pitcher, then that's going to increase his ability, or at least, I guess, the willingness for other teams to scout him and look at him as a guy that was not just a two-pitch dude in 2024 and got by with showing in the first half some stuff that nobody'd seen before and therefore, given the velocity, was able to blow guys away, but no, that he's a much craftier pitcher, like he's talking about in this interview with Fangraphs, than you might otherwise give him credit for. And I think that development, maybe as much as anybody else's, maybe not anybody, but almost anybody else's on this team, on this 28-man roster come tomorrow, is going to help the White Sox going forward because of what he can do on the field and what he can do for the White Sox as a potential trade target, as has been talked about so many times here in the last couple of months. 312-332-3776, that's the phone number. The news of the day is interim manager Grady Sizemore telling reporters that it's going to be Jairo Iriarte and likely Zach DeLoach called up as the 27th and 28th men on the roster when the rosters expand tomorrow afternoon. We got a ball game today. We'll get you the lineups when we come back. We'll talk about the hitting side of things, the Zach DeLoach side of things. We spent a lot of time talking about Jairo Iriarte and what he's going to bring to the roster in the final month. Let's talk a little about the other guy, Zach DeLoach, who has been up here already this season, but has been doing some really good work at AAA Charlotte over the last month. That's next on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Rockland City, 230 to 630 ESPN Chicago.
Hey, welcome back. It's White Sox Weekly here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Join us at the ballpark Friday, September 13th for Hispanic Heritage Night presented by Modelo. Celebrate with friends and family as the White Sox take on the Oakland A's at 6:40 p.m. They won't be the Oakland A's for much longer. The first 15,000 fans, 21 and older, will receive a A la Pantera a la Brieja bobblehead. Plus, stay after the game for a post-game fireworks show. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/HHN. That's whitesox.com/HHN. Here on White Sox Weekly, we're getting you set up for the pregame show. That's going to take place in a little less than an hour, 5:30. We'll start the pregame show tonight. We've got a lineup for the White Sox. Get you that in just a moment. And some key matchups for the ballgame this evening. Just had a conversation with Ethan Katz, White Sox pitching coach. You can download this whole episode and that interview on the ESPN Chicago app. We've been updating you on the news as best we can that the White Sox are set to call up Jairo Iriarte, the fifth-ranked prospect in the organization, a right-handed pitcher that the Sox got in exchange for Dylan Cease, a trade of the Padres in spring training, Drew Thorpe, who is on the major league injured list right now, Jairo Iriarte, and Samuel Zavala, the three players the White Sox got back in that trade. Pardon, three of the four players the White Sox got back in that trade for Dylan Cease. Steven Wilson, reliever, who is also on the major league injured list, part of that trade as well. The other guy the White Sox are set to call up to the rosters when they expand on tomorrow for tomorrow's game, the afternooner for the White Sox and Mets, is Zach DeLoach. And we've seen DeLoach up here at the big league level already. He made his major league debut with the White Sox after coming over in the trade of Gregory Soto to the Mariners earlier this year. DeLoach has played 9 games, 25 plate appearances. He is, 3-for-22. It's not been a huge taste of the big leagues for DeLoach this season. But for the year, down at AAA Charlotte, DeLoach has hit pretty well, if not for as much pop as you might expect a corner outfielder to hit for. He is a left-handed stick, and this season is at 285 with a 372 on-base percentage and a 778 OPS. Over the last month, his work in August down at AAA Charlotte, he's hit 330 with a 429 on-base and slugged 523. He's done so by hitting 2 homers, 9 doubles. He's got a triple as well. He's walked 15 times. He's struck out 27 times. Now, one of the things that I think might help kind of look at whether it's DeLoach or other players is reminding of something we say all the time here on the show is don't scout the stat line, right? But I do think that while exceptions are make the rules, there are a couple of places where you can kind of take a look at some of those stat lines and say, oh, this is a little bit different than looking at a home run rate, perhaps, at AAA Charlotte, or, I don't know, some errors or something like that. The fact that DeLoach has walked 15 times and struck out 27 times is kind of indicative of his plate selection, discipline, and ability to get on base, to have a little OBP. And that's something, a particular skill set on this White Sox roster currently that is very much lacking. They need some on-base percentage, have for a little while now, even dating back to really the 2022 season, and I suppose a little bit in 2021, although at that point the White Sox had like a 9.5% or almost 10% walk rate, one of the best 5 walk rates in all of baseball. That has not been, but you've seen the difference in what the offense can look like if you're walking at a pretty good clip as opposed to if you're just having to get on base via the hit and all of that batted ball luck. Anyway, I think while DeLoach has clearly earned his call-up and is on the 40-man roster, and that makes things just a little bit easier on the other side, if you're comparing it to Colson Montgomery, who is not on the 40-man and would necessitate a move, but the White Sox are light on the 40-man roster. I believe they had 39 at last count. Iriarte is going to need a 40-man spot, so that would take up one at the very least. Could be some other moves for the White Sox as we get to tomorrow. Lord knows there have been a number of different players placed on waivers all throughout the bigs, including, according to reports, Nicky Lopez of the White Sox, second base and shortstop. Tommy Pham was placed on waivers by the Cardinals after the White Sox traded Pham to St. Louis at the deadline. And the Royals have just scooped him up. Robbie Grossman was placed on Royals by the Rangers, and the Royals scooped him up as well. So, you know, there's going to be, I think, over the next 24 hours or so, maybe even 36, some moves yet to be, finished off, I think. The deadline for those waiver moves, and the reason why everybody's watching them as closely as they are right now, is because the deadline to acquire a player via waivers and still have that player be eligible for the postseason is before the beginning of September. By the end of the business day today, you've got to have that player on your roster. That's why all of the flurry and whatnot, and why Kansas City is likely going to play two players down, having claimed Grossman and Pham, and having to make their corresponding moves to clear those spaces for those players. They will, I'm almost assuredly, I haven't seen the flight info for Grossman or Pham or anything, but they will almost assuredly play two players down in the ball game today, because they want those guys on the roster right now so that they're eligible for the playoffs when the Royals get there. The other things we'll have to watch are kind of just which other teams, perhaps like the White Sox, were not going to the playoffs this season. On the outside looking in, as it were, are there any interesting players of a veteran nature that could fit the roster now? It's less likely, especially considering most teams at this point and want to see the youngsters get a little bit more run, make sure that they've figured out everything they can about what the ceiling for a particular player looks like, or give them opportunities to face some challenges that they'd like the player to work on, so that that player can learn from and develop a little bit in those instances. That's preferred, but it's not like there couldn't be that. For instance, Tyro Estrada, infielder for the Giants, was placed on waivers and looks like he has cleared them, rather, so nobody wanted to pick him up. But I could see a situation where a team that's looking for middle infield depth might want to take a flyer on a guy like Tyro Estrada, who's got a pretty good glove and has hit a little bit at the big league level before, maybe if you're light in that particular position. Now, the White Sox, aren't necessarily looking for somebody there. They had just made their move to claim Jake Amaya. He's starting at shortstop for the White Sox this afternoon. They've got Brooks Baldwin and Colson Montgomery and Brian Ramos, all of those infielders down the line. They've got guys they'd rather see here, whether it's now or in the near-term future, than making a claim like that. But just as an example, a player like that might be one that a team on the outside looking in could claim as we get closer and closer to that deadline tomorrow afternoon. We've got a lineup for the White Sox and Mets in this ball game tonight. We'll give you that on the other side of a break. I want to talk a little bit about Davis Martin as well. He's making the start for the White Sox this evening. We'll do all that on the other side. You've got White Sox Weekly on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Sox games, all of them, on the ESPN Chicago app.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. I'm Connor McKnight. White Sox and Mets coming up at 6:10 this evening. Our pregame show at 5:30. We got ourselves a ballgame here on the south side. Sox need one. They've got to snap this losing streak. It's at 8. It's a winless homestand so far. They are 31-105 on the year. The 106 number is our particularly notable one. That would be the White Sox highest loss total in any given season. You want to stay away from that as long as possible, of course. And then there's the whole 120 thing for the White Sox as well. With these Mets in town, the question's been asked a couple of times. The 1962 Mets lost 120 games. That's a regular season high in Major League Baseball. And the White Sox may well be close to hitting that number. In order to stay away from it today, the lineup looks like this. Corey Jolks leads off. He's in right. Luis Robert Jr. is in center field. Andrew Benintendi is in left. Andrew Vaughn has first base. Gavin Sheets is the designated hitter. Corey Lee will catch. Lenin Sosa at second base. Miguel Vargas at third. Jake Amaya at short. And they will face old friend Jose Quintana. Quintana's in his second year with the Mets. He's 6-9 with a 4.36 earned run average. He's thrown 140 in the third innings, 106 strikeouts, 54 walks. Last time, he's not been good in August. In fact, his August ERA is 6.33, and the Mets have not won one of those Quintana starts here this month. But last time out, he was much better. At least the results were 6 1/3 scoreless, allowed just 4 hits and 2 walks. He faced the Padres, but Q did not strike out a batter in that start. So we'll see you know, the unfortunate side of things is, you know, when you look at last night's ball game too, Tyler McGill was called up from AAA by the Mets to make that start. He'd been, you know, bumped up and down the depth chart here over the last couple of weeks. And went 5 1/3, struck out 6, walked 1. The guy has a 10.5% walk rate in the big leagues, and this White Sox offense just isn't one that's well-equipped to take those free passes and put the extra pressure on a starting pitcher at this point. So hopefully they're able to do so against Jose Quintana, who has always pitched pretty well here at Guaranteed Rate Field, even if no decisions were coming his way. No decision to be fine for Jose Quintana today. That means the White Sox could still win this ballgame. At least they keep him away from the left-hand side of the column. For the Mets, it'll be Francisco Lindor leading off at short. More on Lindor in just a little bit. Brandon Nimmo is in center field. Mark Vientos at third base. He made a couple of good plays last night. Pete Alonso at first. Jesse Winker in left. J.D. Martinez, the designated hitter. Starling Marte is in right field. Jeff McNeil at second base. And Francisco Alvarez will hit 9 and be the catcher for the Mets. Davis Martin starts for the White Sox. Martin has been really good and I think a really interesting dude to watch here over the last month of the season and into 2025. There are a lot of different angles that one could take as it regards Davis Martin, that an organization could take regarding Davis Martin. For the year so far, it's 5 starts, 6 appearances, 27 1/3 innings with a .296 earned run average. But I think it's kind of important to take 2 of those outings. His first relief appearance, that was 2 2/3 against Seattle, which was a good relief appearance. I'm not tossing it out because it's an outlier. I want to fudge the stats or what have you. But I kind of take his first 2 appearances, that relief appearance and his first start against the Minnesota Twins, and I put them in different categories than I do the last 4 starts. And the reason for that being is that Martin talked about brushing off some rust coming back from Tommy John, coming off of a pitch limit. He was at a, I believe, 75 pitches pitch limit against the Minnesota Twins on August 2nd. That was his first big league start in 2024, and he hit that 75. He walked 3 in that game, gave up 6 hits, and struck out 5. Stuff was there. But since then, a couple of things have been different for Davis Martin. One, the hard pitch limit as it regard, like an early hook, that seems to have been lifted. And sure, I would bet, and we talked with Ethan Katz about this earlier in the show, you would imagine that the White Sox aren't going to let Davis Martin get to 90, 95 pitches. He's coming off of Tommy John surgery, and you got to be careful of that. His season high pitch total at the bigs has been 88. He also threw 85 against the New York Yankees, where he was pretty good. The arsenal has changed a bit here, and we talked about that with Ethan Katz too, whether it be the changeup or the cutter, a different emphasis for Martin than what he was in 2022. It's a different guy, and I think so many people raved about Martin's mound presence, his makeup, the stuff he had, the velocity he was able to get to in 2022, and, oh, by the way, the newness of it all, not seeming all that daunting to Martin. Now, this year, all of those things, almost all of those things, are the exact same. Maybe there's a little bit of change in velocity, but I wouldn't be surprised if we see some of that tick up a little bit, regained or tick up just a little bit, come 2025. Martin is only 28 years old. He'll turn 28 come January. And when you're looking at a rotation the White Sox may have in 2025, obviously question marks around Garrett Crochet, and depending on what the White Sox organization wants to do with him or what other teams would like to have him for, it's entirely possible that Crochet is not in that rotation in 2025. We've talked about that for 4 months now. Martin could well be, and also could be a guy, if development continues to move this way, that other teams are calling about as well. Because if you can find your way around and in some cases make opposing hitters look foolish in the batter's box with the old stuff that Martin had, hit Tommy John surgery, come back, change the arsenal a little bit, and look even, I don't know, maybe even more intriguing now than he did before, that's going to have some teams interested. That should, and it does, have the White Sox interested in what Davis Martin could accomplish for them as a starter in 2025. Over his last four starts, and I think we mentioned this with Ethan Katz, but over his last four starts, Davis Martin has thrown up a 171 earned run average, four starts, 21 innings, 18 strikeouts, seven walks, only four earned runs, 17 hits, one home run allowed, and one hit batter. What's also encouraging here is that while the batting average is .215 and the on-base percentage is limited to a .287, the FIP, the fielding independent pitching, that's the stuff, that's how good a pitcher is at preventing homers, preventing walks, and hit by pitches, and how good they are at getting strikeouts, that's at 3.22. And I won't do the proofs for you, Lord knows I can't, but I can walk you through some of the math here. That being 3.22 with the ERA at 1.71, sure, there's a split there, and maybe Martin has been a little bit lucky with the seven walks in 21 innings, but not so lucky that you'd expect something to completely fall apart or explode. And there's going to be a start or two here in the last little bit of the season where Martin gets hit around. That happens to everybody, and that's going to be part of the package here for the last month of the season. But the results so far have been incredibly encouraging for Davis Martin. And as much as you can get hyped for a guy like Jonathan Cannon or Nick Nastrini or Drew Thorpe or Jairo Iriarte once he starts throwing, even though it's going to be one inning at a time in relief, I think you can get equally as excited for Martin, considering the fact that while he may not be as young as some of the other guys we just talked about, that he may be as desirable by other teams when it comes to other teams, and that should get the White Sox, you know, just as close to where they want to be going forward as some of the young prospects, the 24 and under guys that are in this organization right now. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number here on White Sox Weekly. We got a ball game coming up at 6:10, pregame show at 5:30. All right here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Welcome back. It's White Sox Weekly on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Sox fans, bring your family to the ballpark with a family pack presented by ExxonMobil. Starting at just $19, each family member gets one ticket, a hot dog, a drink, a bag of chips, plus a cookie. For more tickets, four tickets, for any tickets, visit whitesox.com/family. We'll get back to the show here in just 10 seconds. We've got to take a quick timeout for station identification here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
White Sox and Mets coming up in just a little bit. We've done a lot here on the show already. Talked with Ethan Katz, White Sox pitching coach, right about 4 o'clock. Broke down as best we could the news that the White Sox are set to bring up Jairo Iriarte from AA Birmingham and Zach DeLoach, according to White Sox manager Grady Sizemore, to be the 27th and 28th guys on the roster. Talked a little bit about Davis Martin and Garrett Crochet, a bit about Jonathan Cannon's start last night, all the good stuff. One of the things that I think we brought up just a little bit before we got the news that those two players, DeLoach and Iriarte, are expected to be the extra guys when the rosters expand tomorrow afternoon, was the state of the middle infield as it is, you know, kind of right now. And I guess you can kind of expand this to the rest of the infield as well. I hope in this last month of the season that, for obvious reasons and as plain as this is going to sound, that things pick up across the infield for the Sox. Obviously, Brooks Baldwin right now dealing with a bit of a wrist thing, and it sounds like the White Sox are hopeful that he'll avoid the injured list, but you'd like to see him get back in and take as many cuts down the stretch as you possibly could. Miguel Vargas over at third is another conversation too, and it has just been a really tough go here for Vargas to get it going for the White Sox. What I have seen, and I've mentioned this when I've had the chance to either fill in for Len on the play-by-play side or DJ as working with Len, what I have seen is a good command of the plate for Vargas. The swing itself is still working on getting to some slugging percentage, on getting dangerous, right? And if you just look at the numbers for Vargas here in 2024, just while with the White Sox, and you sum the totals on Baseball Reference, it's been 22 games, an .095 batting average, a .209 on base, and a .162 slugging percentage. It's been rough. But I don't know that amidst that kind of that search for production and the 24 strikeouts in 74 bats, I don't know that I've seen him chase a whole bunch. I don't know that I've seen him kind of let it loose on pitcher's pitches too many times. He's taken attack swings in appropriate counts. He's, you know, for the most part, gone after the kinds of pitches he seemed to want to, you know, trying to get to a fastball or anticipating slider on the inner portion when appropriate. He's just not been able to get the barrel to things. So hopefully for Vargas, that, you know, continued approach, and Grady has talked about this some in post-game press conferences over the last week or so, that kind of headspace, you know, that kind of like, listen, we're bringing the right, the targeting computer is set to the right places and seems to be looking for the right stuff in the right counts. Hopefully that continues to stay, you know, locked in, and that the results start to turn around some. The swing seems to get more comfortable, and you get to see the Miguel Vargas that a lot of people had seen. Guys like Joe Sheehan, who writes really smart baseball for the Joe Sheehan newsletter, really like Miguel Vargas. It's not just an internal thing. It's not just a Dodgers thing where a prospect has kind of been squeezed out and had to go somewhere. There are a lot of people from the outside that have looked at Miguel Vargas and said, well, there's a real player there, to be sure. We've yet to see it here, and I'm really hoping that over this last month, that plate discipline and that approach turns into the kind of results that you'd really like to see from Vargas. We know now that the rosters are going to look different, and it's going to include Deloche and Jairo Iriarte. And what I would presume that means is that Colson Montgomery will have spent this entire 2024 at AAA Charlotte. It's been an up-and-down season for Montgomery. It's been a struggle, I think, at points. And, you know, a number of people, whether that was Paul Yonish, who talked a few weeks ago to White Sox beat reporters, or Chris Getz, the general manager, who's talked about Colson Montgomery at just about every press availability here over the last 3-4 months even, has been asked about Colson, you know, the top position prospect in the White Sox system, has kind of talked about those struggles as being something that he can learn from. And Montgomery himself, when asked by reporters in Charlotte, has said, you know, things as far as saying, I'm almost glad that these struggles have happened here and that they're happening now and that I can learn from them. I'm hoping that's going to be the case, and I would imagine that given the reason we're talking about Montgomery, of course, is because we're just talking about the state of the infield, and I think Montgomery is as much a part of that conversation as the guys who are on this roster now and are going to be playing for the White Sox against the Mets tonight. That's the kind of expectation, and that's the kind of player that Montgomery profiles to be. What we've yet to see, though, is him rise to that next level. And I think for as often as we talk about development on the hitting side for the White Sox and looking for players, plural, to take that next step, we often go back to a guy who, you know, you see on the television broadcast often, and I really enjoy talking baseball with, in Gordon Beckham. And he's pointed this out on broadcasts, in interviews, and all this other kind of stuff. He never really had a chance or a reason, I guess, to fail at the lower levels. He did all of that here at Guaranteed Rate Field in live action in front of all the cameras, all the eyes, all the talk shows, all that good stuff. Tough stuff. Where you're seeing a difference, I think, either from Colson or from the organization, depending on your perspective, or a combination of both, is a willingness, maybe even a demand, to have that happen in the minors. And I think when you take the long-term view of this White Sox franchise currently, with the players that it's got in the fold right now, so much of it, rightly so, hinges on what Colson Montgomery is able to be for this team going forward over the next 5-6 years. I think that's clear, right? And I think you could say the same about a lot of systems, a lot of, you know, organizations, farm systems, when it regards their number one prospect on the position player side, especially if that player is a shortstop, right? Not only is that guy going to be expected to carry the bulk of the defense, the most challenging defensive position at the big league level for years to come, but when he's a prospect like Colson Montgomery is, he's going to be expected to take a big share of the offensive production and handle that as well. So, of course, it makes sense that a big focal point here for this team going forward is Montgomery. I am less concerned, I think, than a lot of other places about how Montgomery's 2024 has gone, especially if that same player, that same profile, that same guy is going to be at AAA Charlotte to start the year next year and get back into this. He's going to get a run at Major League Camp. He's going to be there and I think probably have an opportunity to take a job out of minor league camp. I would think it's entirely possible that there is no minor leagues needed for Colson Montgomery because whatever lessons, whatever swing changes, whatever differences in defensive approaches or whatever, that can take place in the offseason. And those tweaks are better handled when there's a little bit less, I don't know, game pressure or responsibility put on a player perhaps. Now, granted, you'd like to see that player kind of prove those points in games. How much can you do that in spring training? Fair questions. But I think those opportunities are now getting to Colson in a way that maybe they hadn't to a guy like Gordon or other prospects who shot through the system, had been nothing but success, and then gone on to either, you know, flame out a little bit, never reach the high ceilings that they'd shown at the big league level before. And I, you know, you don't have to go all the way back to a guy like Gordon. You can look around the league right now at a guy who got the bag in Julio Rodriguez for the Seattle Mariners. That entire organization, the whole of the offense was shaped around having J-Rod hitting three, you know, or two or whatever, you know, being that guy, that centerpiece. And he's struggled quite a bit this year. It has not been the kind of unbelievable breakout year that we'd seen him have last season. Whether it be injuries or a home run derby or whatever, you know, that kind of step back in production has altered the entire short-term future of the Mariners, as they had a 10-game lead on the Astros on June 19th, and they've now all let that get away. And the Astros have taken over in that division. So, you know, this is not some far-flung, you know, in the past kind of example that we've got to dredge up here. This happens now, even these days, with players who have not seen, you know, the requisite's probably not the right word, but we'll use it here anyway, not seen the requisite failure at the minors and had that opportunity to rework what needs to be reworked, not just from a physical standpoint, but also from a mental standpoint. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number here on White Sox Weekly. You can join us September 14th for Sox Crawl. It's the halfway to St. Patrick's Day party presented by Miller Lite. Enjoy a pregame crawl inside the stadium with happy hour specials on classic ballpark food and drink, entertainment, and more. Plus, receive a White Sox rugby shirt and Sox Crawl hat. To learn more and purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/SoxCrawl. We'll wrap up White Sox Weekly when we come back. Get you all set for the pregame show at 5:30 and first pitch for the Sox and Mets at 6:10 right here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Closing it up here on White Sox Weekly this afternoon. We've got a ball game coming up in just a little bit. Under an hour now before first pitch with the White Sox and Mets here at Guaranteed Rate Field. Davis Martin for the White Sox, Jose Quintana for the Mets. And you can take advantage of one of our best offers this summer. Get one ticket and two beers to select games starting at $19 with Miller Lite Baseball and Brews. Must be 21 and over with a valid ID. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/brews. That's B-R-E-W-S, not the other Brews. That would be weird. Baseball and Brews. when we get to the end of the show here on White Sox Weekly, there's a couple of things we like to do, kind of look around the league a little bit. Playoff races getting somewhat interesting. But there's a statistical happening going on with one of the games, maybe the game's best player in Shohei Ohtani. He got to the 43-43 club last night. 43 steals and 43 home runs. Why 43? Why would 43 matter? Because no one has ever gotten to that total in the same season. The first member of the 43 homer and 43 steal club. He's doing this while not a starting pitcher. He is just the designated hitter. It is entirely possible, maybe even entirely likely, that Shohei Ohtani is going to be the very first 50-50 player in baseball history. 50 homers, he's got 43 of those. And stolen bases, he's got 43. With a month to play, he leads the National League in slugging percentage, in OPS, in OPS plus, in total bases, in home runs, and in runs at 106. I think he's going to win the MVP as the designated hitter, as a designated hitter. It's something that has never happened before. When you look at different versions of wins above replacement or weighted runs created plus, weighted on base average, all of that, you know, sabermetric, advanced analytics stuff, and more stuff that I'm, you know, not even qualified to look through or peruse based on the fact that I could not get through a stats class in college without essentially cheating off Tom Latsky for the better part of a month and a half. It's clear that Shohei Ohtani, as a designated hitter, is better than most other players who also provide value on defense. That is insane. I mean, I think so many of us, in a world where our baseball takes are thrown at us constantly, whether it be on X or Twitter or Instagram or TikTok or whatever, talk radio, hi, right here, it's really easy to sour on the stuff that gets talked about all the time, right? Whether it's your national hosts continuing to talk about Cowboys football, or whether it's guys like me talking about in White Sox Weekly, Shohei Ohtani. This, what's happening with Shohei Ohtani, what he's been able to accomplish over the last five, six seasons, getting injured, coming back and pitching the way he has, winning the awards he's done, finishing fourth in Cy Young voting in 2022, while also finishing second in MVP voting. I mean, I don't think it can be stated enough how close Shohei Ohtani is already at age 29 and having played seven seasons, not even seven full seasons, right? I mean, 2020 was the COVID year. In 2018 and 2019, he's dealing with, you know, stuff, injuries. 104 games in 2018, 106 in 2019. And in those 7 years, I'm kind of convinced that you could call it right now and put Shohei Ohtani into the Hall of Fame. I get it. I understand that that may well be crazy. I understand that that's going to rankle some folks, whether you're a young fan or an older fan or a middle-aged fan like myself. I understand that that sounds wild. But given the fact that nobody's come close to doing what he's doing, and listen, the Babe Ruth conversations, because he's going to get back to pitching at some point, I think. The rehab's already ongoing. He's working to get himself back onto the mound. The Dodgers see him as a start. You've almost got to see him as a starting pitcher and a hitter at the same time, considering the money that they paid him, whether it's $600 million deferred or not. He's the best player in baseball already with a Hall of Fame career and probably in the conversation for one of the best to ever do it. And that's because he does all of it at the same time and is the only player in baseball history. Granted, it's an abbreviated baseball history with the designated hitter, but the only player in baseball history who has put up an offensive season that is good enough, if not absolutely obfuscating the whole fact that he's the designated hitter to be in the MVP conversation, if not dominate the MVP conversation. Now, an interesting dark horse here, a guy that needs a lot more conversation around his MVP candidacy than he's getting, is Francisco Lindor of the New York Mets. But that's a different conversation and for a different time, and he's going to need a lot more production, or maybe Shohei Ohtani to forget what time the team bus is for the last half or the last month of the season. But there's a conversation to be had there, and a worthy one, too. You hear the music? That means we got to run. Thanks so much for listening to White Sox Weekly. A big thank you to Ethan Katz, White Sox pitching coach, for hanging out with us on the show. Thanks to Kevin Zipak, Brennan Riley, and Jack McGrath for their help in producing. We got the pregame show coming up in just a couple of minutes. White Sox and Mets on the way. It's the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.